add an additional card holder and gave them a famous person's name, like, say, Barack Obama. At the time I got the fake credit card with Barack Obama's name, he had not been officially nominated as a candidate for the 2008 presidential election, but I could see it was likely he'd end up in the Oval Office. So I gleefully wrote up the story of my credit card prank, which brought in loads of traffic to our website. I had been taking bigger and bigger risks with my pranks, trying to outdo myself, and I thought pranking the president was pretty much the pinnacle. I was right. The day after Obama received the official nomination, the Secret Service were on my doorstep. As they filed in, I led them to the living room where two of the agents sat on the sofa. I sat on the love seat. The senior agent stood in front of my fireplace, facing me, his arms folded. None of the movie cliches applied. They were not wearing earpieces or sunglasses. Also, they were in my living room, which I've never seen in a movie. You may not realize that the Secret Service not only protects presidential candidates, explained the agent sitting on my couch, but we also protect the nation's money supply. So by getting a credit card in Obama's name, you've put yourself in the crosshairs of what we do. He was in his mid to late 40s with a receding hairline and dark, penetrating eyes. Identity theft carries a maximum of 15 years in federal prison, added the stocky agent in front of the fireplace, then looked around. You've got a beautiful house here, a nice family. He paused. It would be a shame to throw all that away. I had been in some insane situations, but my heart was pumping alcohol-fueled adrenaline to my brain. Perhaps that explained the thought running through my mind, which was, I will not give them the credit card. We'd like the credit card, said the stocky agent, his arms still folded. My voice was shaking. I can't do that. Yeah, why not? Technically, the credit card belongs to the credit card company, I replied, citing a little-known legal loophole. I can't give it to you without their permission. We'll call them, said the agent on the couch, dialing the credit card company on his cell phone. Apparently, they had anticipated this. 1 second, I said, and walked to my computer bag, shaky-legged, to get my voice recorder. If I was going to give up my precious credit card, at least I was going to record the conversation so I could write about it on my website. What's that? Demanded the stocky one. I need to tell you that I will be recording this conversation, I answered, hitting the record button. They looked at each other and with surprising swiftness rose to leave. This interview is over, said the stocky one as they stormed out the door and drove off. I watched them until they turned the corner, then breathed a huge sigh of relief. Then I calmly walked into the bathroom and puked. That night was one of the worst of my life. My wife was furious that I hadn't just handed over the credit card. We were both terrified, having no idea whether the Secret Service would be back later in the night to search the house or simply haul me off to jail. If they come back, she said, you know what they'll find. I had grown increasingly dependent on marijuana, relying on it as the source of my creativity and inspiration, even as it had led me to take wilder and wilder risks. Now I had a young family, the Secret Service was on my doorstep, and I wanted to hold on to the weed even more than the credit card. I can't get rid of that, I said. You don't know what you're asking. You have to get rid of it, she insisted. Either the drugs go, or I do. Did she say that? In my head, at least, she said that. Somehow I had the clarity to see that this was a moment of truth. If I continued with my drinking and drugs, it would ultimately be the end of my marriage, my family, and, as the Secret Service agent said, my home. Inside, I was at war with myself. I wanted so desperately to be free of my addictions, yet I did not have the courage to give up these things I loved so much.